Though his early and very serious work was on the Greek text of the New Testament. Now, he worked on this in a couple of different ways. First of all, he prepared a new Latin translation. The Latin translation that had been almost universally used since antiquity was the Vulgate translation. Remember the Vulgate translation prepared by one of the church fathers, by St. Jerome, on the commission of Pope Damasus. Well, it was recognized by some scholars over time that there were some problems with Jerome's translation, but now Erasmus really sets himself the task of going back, starting with the Greek text and executing a new Latin text. But then he took another step. He prepared and published in 1516 a Greek edition of the New Testament. For the first time, a critical edition of the Greek text of the New Testament. Now, this actually earned him some suspicion from the ecclesiastical authorities. They'd have been perfectly happy to stick with the Vulgate text. They weren't too happy about new Latin translations, and they weren't real happy about getting back to this Greek original. Just like those who had opposed the teaching of Hebrew, there were also people who opposed going back to the original Greek text. Now, like Jacques Lefebvre d'Etaples, he wished to make the church fathers more widely known. And he also worked to prepare editions of a number of the key church fathers. He edited works of Jerome. He edited works of Ambrose. He edited works of John Chrysostom, among others. So, like Lefebvre, he also is very much interested in getting critical texts of the writings of the church fathers and then disseminating these more widely as it became possible to do so. How did it become possible to do so? Let's pick up a point we made in an earlier lecture, the printing press. Printing with movable block type, we associate with the house of Gutenberg, Johann Gutenberg, in Germany, 1453, 1454, perhaps when the Gutenberg Bibles are first printed and disseminated. But by the time that, for example, a figure like Erasmus is at the full flush of his career, there's a number of printing houses, and indeed there is a very important printing house in the Netherlands. And through that printing house, a number of Erasmus's works were issued. Now, early printed books weren't cheap, but they were cheaper than manuscripts. You could make a lot more copies of them, and ideas could circulate much more rapidly. Now, Erasmus's humanist leanings are very clear in his adages. This is a book he published in 1503, though it went through a series of editions, of new editions later in his life. It's a collection of Greek and Latin proverbs and pithy sayings that are basically designed to serve as kind of little potted pieces of wisdom, but as guides to living well, as guides to right conduct. Now, I hope you'll hear there an echo of Guarino of Verona and the whole idea that you should read and read and read and reread classical works in such a way that you just become like the people in those works. In 1503, Erasmus published his Enchiridion, that is a Greek word that literally means a handbook, which was for persons in power to tell them how to reconcile Christian ethics and the exigencies of office. Now, this was then a challenging proposition. That had always been a challenging proposition. I dare say it still is now. How can one exercise public office, put people to death, fight wars, do all manner of things, and live according to the ethics of Christian teaching? Well, Erasmus prepared his Enchiridion, his handbook, to help people with those difficult issues. He became a master of satire. His two greatest works, of course, are The Praise of Folly and Julius Excluded. Now, The Praise of Folly is just worth reflecting for a moment or two on its title. Its title is Greek again, Encomium Moriae. Now, that means The Praise of Folly in Greek, translated into English. But, of course, Thomas More was his great friend. So, at the same time, the title is a double entendre. It means The Praise of More. So there's a kind of a joke hiding in the title of The Praise of Folly. Now, what the book is this. Lady Folly, this utterly innocent young thing, sort of goes all over Europe and speaks in defense of the worst and silliest and most abusive practices of church and state everywhere. And, of course, we're in on the joke, so we know that poor Lady Folly has just always got it wrong. So The Praise of Folly is actually not The Praise of Folly at all. It's the criticism of folly. Julius Excluded is another bitter satire addressed to the abuses of the church in Erasmus's day. Julius II, the very pope who commissioned Michelangelo to do those tomb sculptures for him, of which only bits and fragments remain to this day. Julius II dies. He arrives at the pearly gates. There, of course, he is greeted by Peter, who is his predecessor in office. And Peter doesn't recognize him and won't let him in. Well, Erasmus is really having a little fun with the church in his day. Again, like Collett, like More, a distinguished social critic. Now, in his later years, Erasmus had a battle with Martin Luther on the human will. We'll talk about that in our next lecture. Erasmus held to the freedom of the will. Erasmus held to the Christian, to the Renaissance, to the humanist ideal of improvement. One can say that through his scholarship, interestingly enough, Erasmus contributed in various ways to the emerging Protestant movement. But Erasmus, like More, like Lefebvre d'Etaples, like Collett, would not join it. Even so, the Catholic Church, for a period of time, suspected some of his teachings and rejected others. Now, we've seen already that there were men like John Wycliffe and John Huss who had challenged church teachings. We have seen that the Babylonian captivity and the Great Schism had damaged the papacy's reputation. We had seen that conciliarism had emerged as a new form of ecclesiastical organization. Now we can see how the Northern Renaissance not only brought the new learning of Italy to Northern Europe, but helped to pave the way for the religious upheaval of the 16th century that we call the Reformation. And to that we turn in our next lectures.